This is Ten Radio, community radio for the Ten Parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at tenradio.org.
Hello, it's Barry Alloway. My turn to be on the community show this morning, and a very warm welcome to the Member of Parliament for Taunton Deane, Rebecca Powell.
Good morning.
Good morning, Rebecca. Lovely to have your company, and thank you for sparing time. I know you're very, very busy. The last time you and I met, actually, in this studio was when you were standing for election, and you were one of the candidates who we interviewed. Do you remember?
I remember it exceedingly well. I'm absolutely sure I've been back since then.
Well, this is the last time I saw you. I wanted to ask you, actually, now you've been an MP for what? 18 months or so, how the role of MP stacks up against your previous expectations.
That's interesting. I didn't actually have that many expectations because I had never done it before, and there's no set plan. There's no like book of how to be an MP. So it's very much left to work as you think fit. And every MP, in fact, is different according to what your constituency is like, what your demands are like, what you need to bring forward for your constituency, what your own ambitions might be. So there's no plan. So you work that out as you go along. But no, it's working well. It's really, really, really busy. But it's, yeah, it's absolutely fascinating.
What has surprised you most about being an MP?
I do deal with every single subject under the sun. You would be absolutely flabbergasted at the things people contact me about, either in person or by letter or by email, because of course they can contact me in any way, or social media. The breadth of it is simply enormous. And they do, you know, I laugh sometimes because they do seem to think I have to be an expert on absolutely everything. And I do have to find out about all these things. So that's amazing, really. And I suppose what I've been heartened by is that pretty much all my MP colleagues, and particularly the new intake, who I'd say very much come from the real world, you know, their heart is in the right place. They've gone there to try and help and do something that might move the country on or give people a better life. And I find that very heartening, because I think we get a very bad press a lot of the time, and on the whole people are only trying to do good.
Well, I've taken a look at your website, and I looked again this morning to make sure there was nothing different on there. And I can see from your appearances standing up in the House how many subjects you have to be conversant with. Quite amazing. And presumably this is done purely on research.
Yeah, well, I'll just give one example. So last Wednesday, I was in the chamber, so I was talking about the Somerset Rivers Authority and the precepts. So I had to know all about what I was saying there. Then within an hour, I was making a speech against violence against women and girls. And then within 2 hours after that, I was making another speech about the elephant ivory ban. I mean, that just about sums it up, really. And that's a normal day.
Well, that's something that crops up every morning at breakfast, of course, doesn't it? Yes. You obviously have regular constituency surgeries, and they're normally on a Friday, which would be today. And I know that from time to time you do move the venue. But what themes have actually cropped up most frequently since you were elected at those meetings?
Well, they vary as well, and I do move them around. But actually, I mean, my whole life really is a surgery, because now with social media and all the ways people can contact me, they can contact me even without coming to see me. So my whole life is really a surgery, I'd say. And the issues vary enormously, actually. Lots of them are individual cases where people are struggling to get the right advice about things and don't know quite where to turn next, whether it's to get the right housing. Often they're housing related, people who have had problems who are on the housing list who want help with that. Quite a lot of medical issues where people are really struggling with the NHS system, haven't quite got in through the right system. We have a number of cases where people can't get visas for their partner or other half or child who's in a different country and they want to get them here.
Right.
I mean, and this morning I've met with businessmen, so I've met a number of people before I came here. For example, one meeting was all about development and planning issues and how on earth we're going to bring forward all this housing that we desperately need. And another guy, and I'm sure he won't mind me mentioning him, he would like to write an anthem for Taunton Deane, and how am I going to help him get this into all the schools to write this song? Right. So, you know, it's as varied as that.
But you've touched on a number of points that I wanted to raise with you, if I may. New house building in our constituency. I've written down here, is it too much or too little? And who are we building the homes for? You asked this question an awful lot, but I've been in this area for 40 years and I've seen a tremendous growth in house building in the whole Taunton Deane constituency. Is it necessary, do you think?
Well, if you look at the national statistics, we're completely underbuilding. We have really not built enough houses in the last decade. There's a massive national housing shortage. And that's one of the things people come to me, to my surgeries about. Mm-hmm. We've got over 3,000 people on the housing ladder in Taunton Deane. There simply is not enough stock. So whilst it seems like we're building lots of houses, because suddenly we started building some, we're really not building enough. And it's really controversial, isn't it? Because I knock on doors and people bemoan the fact that there's likely to be some housing around them, and yet they'll be living in a house that was built within the last so many years, yes, saying, you know, I'm all right, but and everybody wants their child to have a house or their elderly parents to downsize into another house. So nationally, we do need to... This government said it wants to build 1 million houses by 2020, but, you know, we're going to be really pushed to actually achieve that. But, you know, the thing I always talk about is if we have to have these houses, we have to have the right infrastructure, the roads, the schools, the doctor surgeries. We have to have the green space, the cycleways and the walkways. You know, those are the things I talk about as much as I possibly can. And I've been working very closely with Taunton Deane Council to try and get this garden town status for, if we got that, would give an injection of money that would help to plan our developments better so that they are nicer places to live in. I mean, I think that's absolutely crucial. So we watch this space. We'll hear whether that's going to happen or not.
How do you react, though, to the many people that I come across who say we seem to be having a disproportionate amount of new building in our own area as against others? And I must say, having travelled around the West Country a lot, as I still do, I do think that Taunton and Wellington in particular have had a huge amount of new houses compared to most other places I visit.
I think most other places would also dispute that with you. Mm. I think the plan was for 28,000 new houses around here up until, I think, 2028, and that's come right down. They've knocked it right down, I think, to just 16,500. But the point is, Taunton is the county town of Somerset. It's a major centre. And Wellington, you know, you could also argue it the other way, that these places will thrive with more people in them, because then you've got, you can have more facilities, you know, more shops, more pubs, more all the rest of it, which people actually want. And also, I get people coming to me, in fact, you might be interested out here with Liscombe, saying, why did those planning applications for our village get turned down? And this was raised with me, actually it was a meeting I went to, but it was the Village of Membury, which is up on the Blackdown, because they wanted a load of houses and it was turned down because it was said to be unsustainable because there wasn't the right public transport or whatever. But the thing is that the village actually wanted the houses because they said, how can our villages remain viable if we don't have people living in them? So you've got that conflict going on all the time as well. I'm getting very involved in this area because I was made a parliamentary private secretary to the Housing and Planning Minister, Gavin Barwell, and we've just been bringing a piece of legislation through called the Neighbourhood Planning Bill, which is also quite controversial, and lots of people listening probably will know about these neighbourhood plans. So this is now being made a legal requirement that communities will be required to come up with their plans, but the plans have to agree with the local plan that your local authorities have come up. So you can't blanket say we don't ever want any development here ever again. You can't do that. You've got to look at what the requirement is, but you can have a say in where it should go, what it should be like, how it should look, what the design is, all of those things that I think are really, really important to people. And it's all to try and increase the amount of houses we've got to build to cope with all these people who actually can't even get into a house.
As you say, though, it is partly a question of the infrastructure being there in the first place, the schools, the doctors, particularly the transport. And transport's something I really wanted to ask you about, because very much in this part of the world, our transport has been going down and down from a public viewpoint, and more use of cars, which clearly are very much against the green theme that you have very strongly in Parliament, that I've noticed. Is the government doing enough to encourage public transport in this part of the world, do you think?
Well, on the green theme, we've just opened a fund to increase electric cars, you know, and actually there's an awful lot of very good progress being made in that direction, and we will move further in that direction. So that will help enormously. And that's all about innovation, technology. Also, all our air pollution issues are coming into play, rightly so. I was on the select committee inquiry into air pollution, and, you know, 50,000 people are dying a year from nitrous oxide poisoning.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we've really, really got to do something about that. And that will have a direct impact on our car use and the kind of cars or vehicles that we drive.
Mm.
And there's a new bus bill going through as well, which is hopefully going to help some of the issues about public transport. So there's an awful lot going on in this area. And I think that the government's moving in the right direction. And I press wherever I can about the green transport and the cycleways and all of that. But the point is, as well, everybody wants to use their car, don't they? You know, you'll know it from your villages. It was the same in my village. I campaigned long and hard when I was on the parish council for buses for the elderly people to get in and out of town. And then, you know, how many people actually use them? You know what we're up against.
I've seen it myself. Several of the bus routes which were campaigned for very strongly literally had empty buses. Not very frequent, but empty buses when they were travelling past, which is a great shame, isn't it? But really, that brings me on to this question of the railways. And obviously, there are clearly big problems with the unions.
On Southern Rail.
On Southern at present. But, you know, once you start rattling cages with the unions, I get worried, and I'm sure a lot of people do listening, that this could spread to other parts of the country. How do you think the government are tackling this problem at present? Should they intervene?
They're standing up at the moment, and whether they will intervene, I'm not sure yet. But the unions are obviously targeting that particular area because they know it's so busy, and so they're trying to make their point. But I actually don't think they've got a good case, and I hope the government stand up and take them to task. Well, in the West Country, you know, we don't have the same problems, and we are obviously, what we're doing in the West Country is working to improve our rail network, and there's a lot of work going on. I'm involved with all the other local MPs to actually speed up routes to London. That's on the cards. You know, we can get to London in an hour and 50 on our fast train, which is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
We're also, you know, I've worked hard to get this 4.6 million to transform Taunton Rail Station, and that's a joint project with Network Rail and Great Western Rail, because that traffic through that station is due to double within the next 10 years. The issues that's raised by people here was often when they get into Taunton, there's nowhere to park. So there'll be a big new multi-storey car park as part of the development. I've been working with locals. I got a group of people around a table actually to say, well, what's this car park going to look like? Please, can we make it look a bit more artistic than just a concrete block? Because you'll see that as you come into Taunton. So I've been working actually with a whole group of people having their say. So I hope that Network Rail and Great Western Rail listen to us, because all those things are really important, aren't they, for the image of the place,
absolutely.
You know, that is the county town of Taunton.
Is this car park going to be situated within just a few minutes' walk?
Yes, it's going to be where the top car park is already, but it'll obviously be able to take more cars, which would be much better. I did also a local survey, which I did, and I do quite a few of these little things. I did that on the internet, and people could input their views, because, and lots of people who live around there, of course, it's a nightmare for them because all their streets are blocked with all the people from the station parking in their streets. So they would actually like there to be more parking. So that's just one of the small things that is part of it.
And would free car parking encourage more people to use it, do you think?
Well, then you've got the problem, haven't you? Are they using it for the station, or are they using it to get into town to go to work?
Well, it's a fair walk into town from there.
Well, no, it isn't actually, because when it's all up and running and the station's turned around to face the river, that will be the walk into town. There's going to be this boulevard, tree-lined avenue, which will walk you down to the river and then past the cricket ground into town. So actually, it's not that far. And if it all looks nice, it should be a lovely, lovely walk.
I agree. It all sounds very nice. But I just wanted to press you before we move on from transport on the point you made about the government might step in as far as the unions are concerned. Do you feel that, or is it felt by the government, that the current laws are not strong enough on strike action?
Well, don't want to be held account to the unions. You know, we want the country to work for everybody, not just for the people in the union. So I think just watch this space.
Why do you think we've got to this point in the current dispute from the legislation that's been there a long time, since, in fact, the Thatcher government? Why has it suddenly become apparent that the unions seem to be calling strike action with almost impunity now?
I mean, the unions obviously, you know, standing up for their rights and their issues, but when it comes down to the point that they're affecting ordinary people's daily lives in
very
such
much.
A desperate way. And imagine if that was us trying to go to work.
Yes, yes.
What a nightmare. And I fear, I really fear that something terrible is going to happen, like someone's not going to be able to get home from London and something terrible will happen to them, and it will be because they couldn't get on the train. And I fear for that. And I think the unions need to be very, very careful about how far they push this and what will happen in the end. But what we do want is efficient, fast, reliable public rail.
Absolutely.
That serves the people.
Absolutely.
You know, that is the purpose of it, and runs effectively. That's what the ultimate aim is, and that's what, you know, we should be working towards.
Obviously, no one's looking for a fight with the unions, but it does look as though something has to happen in a big way, doesn't it? A big bang somewhere, get this one sorted out.
Mm.
Anyway, can I move on to business rates for small and medium-sized businesses in the constituency? Now, business rates, though, were something raised during the interview I had with you before when you were a candidate. And I know you said at the time that in your pre-election interview that you were working with other people from Parliament with a view to doing something about business rates. Obviously, there has been some relaxation since this government took office. Do you feel you've made enough progress, and is there something else you can do?
Well, I think you could say enormous progress is being made, because very shortly local councils will be able to set their own rates and keep what they raise, which didn't happen before, because contrary to people's views, and lots of people used to come to me about how much business rate they paid, actually the local council only kept 7% of that. It's a very small amount. So by 2020, they'll be able to be in charge of that themselves, and it'll be up to them how they set it. And already lots of small businesses are exempt from business rate relief. That's going to increase as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully that will be very good news for the smaller businesses in Taunton Deane. And we'll have to work out how Taunton Deane decides to operate this system, and hopefully it will bring benefits locally.
Sure, you're all for the semi-autonomy of local councils in this respect.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a positive.
I think it is too.
Positive. We'll have to watch the space to see how it actually works. But the aim is to make it more local. You've got more local input, more local say, and you can then make your own plans to try and attract business or the types of business that you want.
Clearly, with the uncertainties which Brexit has given us, and I'll come back to that in a moment, there is obviously going to be a major dependence on small and medium-sized businesses in this country to really push us forward and make up for some of the gap that's bound to be there once we leave Europe.
Well, I mean, already small and medium-sized businesses are the backbone of the country, as we know. And around here, Wellington and Wiveliscombe, an awful lot of small, medium-sized businesses. But they're all employing people. And if everyone took on another person, you know, that would make a massive difference to our country.
Yes.
So they are the backbone, and we do need to make sure we've got the right structure in place to enable them to do what they need. So this government commitment to, you know, better digital infrastructure will help. We are making progress now at last in that direction. You know, there's been a massive injection into infrastructure and funding, and I'm working all the time to make sure we get our share to this area. All those things we're talking about, the railways, the roads, everything will help connectivity. And in the southwest, I mean, we're below national levels of productivity. We're, I think, on average 7%. The national is 8%. We're below. We do need to work to improve that, and that means all the things I've mentioned also means upping our skills and our education. So I'm working very hard with Somerset County Council and the Bridgewater and Somerset College, which hopefully we will get upgraded to the university status. The idea of that is that it will run courses that are very, very tailored to business and what business wants, so that our young people go out equipped to work in those businesses, whether it's aeronautical, whether it's nuclear with the Hinkley spin-offs, whether it's to do with health, because you've got the huge hospital of Somerset. Things have started, but those are the kind of focused courses we need to run so that young people are skilled up to go into the world straight away, helping to drive the economy forwards. Because if we don't make that work, we can't then pay for all the other things we want about, like the infrastructure, the buses, the public transport and all of those things.
Is this going to be rolled out, though, at an even younger age in conjunction with the schools programmes?
Well, we've got the apprenticeship scheme the government is going full steam ahead with, and that will be starting at a lower age. And also more emphasis, because sadly, I mean, lots of schools have lost their careers department. So more emphasis, and I'm hoping to run an apprenticeship event, which initially will be bringing the businesses and those who can explain all about how these apprentices, probably April-ish.
Right. Where do you plan to hold this?
Possibly at Richard Hirsch's College. You just need a big venue to and get people together. Yeah. And then once everyone's on board with that, the idea would be then to invite students to some sort of event so that they know what the options are.
I think that's going to appeal greatly to Kingsmead School. Sure, there will be teachers and probably some pupils as well listening that will find that very encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, some schools are already doing really great work trying to give their pupils ideas about what opportunities are in the working world. Because so often, young people don't seem to know what the opportunities are. I mean, we have this argument all the time about engineering. No one seems to be going into engineering. Yes. Why not? Is that because they just think it sounds really boring? Because engineering involves a massive wealth of opportunities, as does the house building industry. I was talking to the House Builders Federation the other day, and they were saying there are so many opportunities. It's not just about bricklaying, you know, and being an electrician. There are all the other, there's the quantity surveying, there are all the admin posts, there are massive, especially for women, there are loads of opportunities. Do they know about them? Because they've got a huge problem with people not coming into the industry at all levels, right across, including those very practical areas. We need better skills. So a new college has just been set up, funded by, I think, our top 20 developers are all putting money in, £3.8 million fund, to try and address some of these problems for our young people.
Right, thank you for that. Can I just touch on social care? Because I know that this was something raised this week, and the roles of councils. There is a significant increase in council tax being suggested, and I'm sure this will happen to partly offset the cost. But what do you think could be done for social care in this constituency?
Yes, so councils will be able to put their precept up to 3% now to raise money for adult social care. And if that's ring-fenced, the general consensus from people I've talked to is that they would be happy to do that. I think it's £1 for every household, for that money to be directed directly to adult social care. And obviously there is a real issue with the NHS health service and the social care service. And I've talked to lots and lots of people about this. And there are some very good plans underway, these transformation plans, but they're two separate systems. That's what the problem's been. And what we really need is one system so that they work much, much more closely together. Yes. And that is what will happen. It can't just happen overnight. And there's an awful lot of work going on it. It has reached almost tipping point. Yeah. I fully appreciate that. Lots of people come to me about that. My own family has fallen foul of the entire thing as well. Because also we keep talking about the elderly, and we do need to look after them. And I'd love to change the whole way we think about old people. Honestly, give them more respect. I went actually on holiday to Kenya in the summer. It was very fortunate. It was my 25th wedding anniversary holiday. And you know, I never tell people my age, so don't ask me it. And having been in the media,
people can do maths at home,
having been
worry.
In the media as a woman, you also never reveal your age. And when they found out over there that I had three children and that they were sort of aged 18 to 24, oh, they were almost worshipping me. They thought, you must have so much wisdom. How wonderful you are. Yeah. And they revere their old people for their knowledge. Mm. I thought, why don't we do that in this country? So, A, we need to change the whole way we think about it. So there's that. And the whole issue of bed blocking in the NHS. Yeah. The wrong people are turning up at A&E, and that's all part of the system. And we are working to change that with all these transformation plans. And there's some very good small projects going on in Yeovil Hospital where they've linked up the GPs with the hospital. Musgrave is trying to follow in that footstep, but need a big injection of cash to make that work, and hopefully that will eventually be forthcoming. But it's not just about the elderly blocking up the hospitals and not being able to get them out. What that then does is stop the people who are sick and ill, who need the treatment in the hospitals, can't get in.
Absolutely.
Because there's no bed. And that is a tragic way to treat people. And I actually was so incensed about some of this week. I went around and knocked on Jeremy Hunt's door myself, and I gave him the whole spiel. Well, he is actually a really, really genuinely sympathetic guy, and he does get it. But I thought, I'm just going to tell him what I really think, and that doesn't hurt.
It looks as though you have told him.
And the good thing about that, I will just say that, you know, I'm a Conservative MP, we have a Conservative government, so I can do that.
Of course.
That is what I can do. And I do it all the time over many issues. And I can't always succeed, but they do have to listen.
Well, I was going to ask, you've brought me nicely onto a question I was going to ask. Just how much influence does an individual MP or even a group of you have with government ministers?
Well, that's where you have the benefit if your government is in power and they have to listen to you. And I can see exactly how that works now. And I can also see that those people, if you only have one MP from one of the parties or a handful of MPs, they really have little influence. We do a certain amount of work cross-party, which is really good on certain issues. And I'm on quite a few of these all-party groups. And you work together on things. But on some of the other key issues, you have a lot more influence if your government is the one in power. and they have to listen. And yeah, the door is always open.
Yeah, you've enjoyed.
I do enjoy that, yes. Yeah. And I lobby on many, many things. So, for example, just a small one was the hydrographic might have moved from Taunton when mm-hmm. I first became the MP. 700 highly skilled workers, that would have been devastating. Well, say our party hadn't been in power. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this. Say the Labour Party were in power. One of the places they wanted to move that to was Exeter, to the science park, where they've got the only Labour MP in the West Country. That would have been a great box-ticking exercise, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
So that didn't happen. And it doesn't always work like that at all. And you work as a team, very much so. And really, I'm working for the general good of my constituency, you know, to get the very best for them. So I'm always knocking on doors and raising issues. And another thing I'll say is that on that issue as well, it's also you have to kind of time your approaches. And they're more timely if you know there's something useful going on, or there's a fund that you can go and talk about. If you've discovered that there's a particular infrastructure fund and you think you've got a project in your constituency that absolutely fit that bill, that's the time to go and make your big approach. Well, I've done a lot of work on the Growth Deal 3, which is the next tranche of money we hope was coming out, and we would like to get certain infrastructure projects into that. So I did a lot of working on that. But a small example would be the LIBOR fund. We just got the £1 million for the Wellington Monument.
Yes.
Well, I discovered by accident that a small pot of that money that is coming from the bankers that have, you know, not behaved well, was allocated to forces, charities and work. And a small part of that was allocated to war memorials. I just discovered that by accident. And I thought, well, time to try and put in a bid for the Wellington Monument Restoration Project. And how fantastic. We've managed to unlock that funding. We've got a lot more to raise, but it's a fantastic start.
Thank you. Time is pressing us, so just one very quick point, if I may. Brexit, always hot news. As someone closer to the centre of government, far closer than the rest of us, how do you think it's going as far as the government's concerned? Even the initial planning?
Well, as you know, and you will know from listening to any of the debates or the interviews, there's very little that actually can be told in public, because you don't want to give your negotiating secrets away. And I actually fully understand that, because that would be
I'm really asking for your opinion.
Well, it's going along exactly as we were told it would following the referendum.
Is Mrs. May confident, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, she's a great leader. Yeah. She is standing up for everything that the people of Britain wanted to stand up for. I think she's doing a terrific job. I won't say it's not challenging. I think it is very challenging. But the people of Taunton Deane voted 52% leave, and I was a Remainer. But I am doing what the people want, and I would be foolish to try and ask for the opposite. And so we will trigger Article 50, we will write the Great Repeal Act, and we will go on from there. And we will get the very, very best deal that we can possibly get out of it.
Okay, one other quick question I wanted to ask, and this isn't on the original list, so forgive me. Boris Johnson, is he the right man for the job?
He is actually a very talented fellow. He's got many strengths. And Boris, well, I again, as I said earlier in this interview, watch this space. I mean, he actually often says lots of things lots of people would like to say but don't dare. And we'll see how he does. He's in a very high-profile position. Mm-hmm. Again, it's quite a challenging position with Brexit and all that that involves. And he'll have more power once we've triggered Article 50. Yeah, we'll see how he goes.
Do you see yourself waiting in the wings for a post higher up the government?
I don't think you're allowed to ask me.
Against opinion, I'm asking for.
We'll just see how things go. All I'm trying to do is do the very best I can do as our local MP. Yeah. And I hope people think that I am doing a good job, and I have had a certain amount of successes so far. I have a fabulous staff working in my Taunton office and in London, if anybody wants to get hold of them. No, but they are truly excellent. They're really well known themselves in the local community. I think that really helps. And I think proving that there's a real job of work to be done by the MP and their role locally and as this conduit from Taunton Deane to Westminster and Westminster to Taunton Deane. Yeah,
very important. I think time has finally finished.
Well,
here.
Can I wish all the listeners a very happy Christmas and a prosperous new year.
Thank you.
And it's lovely to pop out here to
thank you for spending the time to come to see us. I do hope you'll come again. We've got a bit of music to finish up with, but can I just finish up by saying on behalf of us all at Ten Radio and our listeners, a very happy Christmas to you.
Thank you so
much. We're going to go out with Alid Jones and Walking in the Air.
Oh, I love that. So nice.
This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org.